Thanks again for joining us at Tribal Fiat Grant Live. I'm your host, Christian Gray. Big show today, a lot of material to cover. This might go over an hour, so be prepared for that. We're going to first talk about a recent bit of news in South Buffalo, New York, where there was an arson on a home that belonged to a black family, and it is a supposed hate crime. And a white man who lives in the area was interviewed, and they said, "Why do you think this happened?" And he gives you his answer. And we're going to walk through that interview. I'll add some commentary. And then after that interview, he goes on a radio show to clarify his views. And, of course, the goal of both the original interviewer and the radio guys is to make this guy look like an idiot, racist. And it's just a really good example of what our enemies do, their tactics, and also a good example of how to stand up and speak the truth. This guy is one of us, and he doesn't back down. You'll like this. After that, we have Joe Adams from the White Voice radio show, who also runs the website SaveWhitePeople.com. We'll be on to talk about his work and the basics of white advocacy. So let's first get started with this interview.
So tell me, you lived here for 30-something years. They're classifying this fire as a potential hate crime. What do you think about that?
I think that if people just stayed in their own side of town, their own neighborhood, that things like that wouldn't happen.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, every race and color has their own section of Buffalo almost, so if they just stay on their own side, things like this wouldn't happen. People in these neighborhoods don't want those type of people moving down here and ruining the property value and destroying the neighborhood. So when things like that happen, it shouldn't be such a shock.
What do you mean by those types of people?
Minorities. African Americans.
So are you suggesting that they should stay on the east side rather than coming here to South Buffalo?
Well, they've already wrecked the east side. Why should they come down to the south side and wreck that neighborhood?
Do you think that by saying these things, people on the other side of the city get offended? Do you think that there's some sort of a bias, potentially?
A lot of people feel this way. They just won't say it.
But you are?
Yeah.
Why are you coming out and saying these things?
Because I own a home and I see what happens when they move into the neighborhood. Property value goes down, kids on the corner, crime goes up. The east side used to be a beautiful place. Look what they did to that.
Do you think that there's an issue, though, in what you're saying?
Well, I'm sure there is, but, I mean, you got to take a look at why it's an issue.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, they just ruin neighborhoods.
I guess what I'm getting at is that you're generalizing tremendously. These people might have just been here looking for a different way of life, a better way of life.
Maybe people are afraid what after you let one family in, then they more of them come in. You know, that's just how it is around here.
All right. Do you think there's anything wrong with what you're saying?
I don't feel there's anything wrong with it. A lot of people would feel wrong about it, but I don't.
Do you think there's anything wrong with what you're saying? People may be offended about this.
What a flamer. Who is the guy doing the interview? His name is Ed Dranch. E-D, last name D-R-A-N-T-C-H. He's a reporter for WIBB, Victor Boy, Western New York's news leader. Looks like a Jew, but I don't know. I can't always tell by the size of the hook nose. His Twitter profile is at EdDranch4. He says, "I love living in Buffalo and meeting new people." And he gives his telephone number, 716-440-5718. And you can email him at ed.dranch@wivb.com. So be sure to follow up with him and let him know how you feel about his effeminate interview of a guy standing up for free association and his own people. You gotta love what you heard from this guy. His name, by the way, is William Shanahan, and he lives in South Buffalo. I can't find any information on the guy, but I wish I could contact him to give him my support. As you will hear in the next interview, he says that he gets lots of support. The more people than not are coming up to him and saying, good job, thanks for standing up for our people. But he's right. He tells this guy, I'm a homeowner. I've seen what blacks did to the east side. I don't want them to do it to the south side. And they will. And the reporter asks him, why are you saying this? He says, well, everyone thinks this way. They just won't say it. But he did. So props for him for speaking up. And by the way, you'll never hear your Christian pastor speak like this at all. So here's a guy, who knows if he's a Christian or not, but he's just, looks like a painter, judging by the video. He has paint on his shirt. Blue-collar guy, trying to work and pay his bills and doesn't want to see his town run down by blacks. And they get an interviewer out there to just try to hang him. They don't care what he thinks, why he thinks it. They just want him to say certain things so they can run a news story that whites are racist. Here's the second interview by a bunch of douchebags named Ted Shred and Tom Reagan. It's the Shred and Reagan Show. You can find them at shredandreagan.com.
Neighborhoods don't want those type of people moving down here and ruining the property value and destroying the neighborhood. So when things like that happen, it shouldn't be such a shock.
What do you mean by those types of people?
Minorities. African-Americans.
Oh, he took the bait.
Did you catch that? Here's a couple radio hosts. They heard about Ed Durant's interview of him, so they got him on to pile on the racism charges. The point here is not to have an objective conversation. It's to run a news story that we've got some racists out there. And what he said was, he took the bait. What's he talking about? He's talking about Ed Durant, this news reporter, going out there for the very purpose of giving him some bait. He's not out there to interview anybody. He's out there to get him to say the right things. So he asks the questions. Who are these people you're talking about? What does those people mean? He says, blacks, African-Americans, minorities. And the show host goes, he took the bait. That's how Jewish media works, people. It's not news. It's not objective conversations. It's not reporting. It's agenda. It's political. And just as Ed Durant was out there with some bait to offer, the same thing with these two guys. They don't care about his views. They have bait to offer, too. They're trying to get him to show how big of a racist he is, and here's how they do it.
Is he on the phone?
He is on the phone.
What's his name?
I don't know.
He doesn't have a name? Hey, bud, what's up?
How's it going?
What's your name?
William Shanahan.
William, thanks for coming on the show. So, Ed Durant shows up yesterday. He puts the camera in front of your face, and why'd you say stuff?
Well, I was trying to explain to him that it shouldn't be such a shock that things like that happen when you know, people move into a neighborhood. I was explaining to him that they're not used to people like that moving down there. And then, you know, the guy lied. First he said I was a resident of the First Ward. I'm not a resident of the First Ward. I'm a resident of South Buffalo on Seneca Street.
Okay.
Okay, all right, so you were trying to explain to him, but in the process, you know, explaining to him, missed out the important point, which would be, if you had just said something along the lines of, I personally think it's wrong, it's something I don't agree with, but this is the way it happens. That part was missing from it.
Well, the part that was missing was where I tried to explain to him that, you know, these people buy homes in nice neighborhoods. And I live down here on Seneca Street, and my family's lived in this home all their life. They moved from the east side of Buffalo. That's ruined now. So now people can just come down to South Buffalo and ruin South Buffalo? That's what I was trying to get across. I wasn't trying to...
No, I think that came across. I think what's come across is you believe black people ruin neighborhoods.
Well, they just happen to ruin this one. They're starting to ruin this one, yeah.
But, you know...
I'm not going to take back what I said because I firmly believe in what I said. I'm just, you know, he couldn't have made it sound any worse. But, that's fine. I just wanted to get across that I don't live in the First Ward because that's a lie. I'm from Seneca Street.
All right, so you wanted to clear that part of it up. Now, let me ask you something. Have you lived there your whole life?
Yes.
Okay, so you really haven't lived in too many other places.
Well, I've lived in different states and things like that, but...
Where else have you lived? Theory. Let me ask you, where else have you lived?
Georgia, Florida, Tennessee.
All right, so, but I guess the point I was trying to make is...
But I never went down to neighborhoods and sold drugs and stood on street corners and things
right.
like that.
But here's the thing, I've lived in neighborhoods where white people moved into the neighborhood and they sold drugs and brought down property values and made a mess of the joint. White people.
Yeah, that happens.
Right.
But so, that's not what we were talking about here.
No, but I think what they were trying to say is, why would someone just pick on the fact that the guy was of a different race?
Who wasn't a known drug dealer.
He was not a known drug dealer. It was, and they own the house. And, you know, there's a difference. And I'm sure you probably know this, that the people who own houses act differently than those who rent, white and black.
I don't even know what happened at that house. Me and that man were speaking about in general,
right,
generalities. I didn't even know what happened at that house until that guy showed up there.
Uh-huh.
He stopped and was talking to me and asked me how I felt about a situation.
Right. But you understand that the backlash from you saying stuff like that is that you basically took an entire race of people and said they ruin neighborhoods, not certain types of people, whether they're black or white. And that's the huge difference.
Well, there's a backlash. I've had death threats and everything like that, but I'm not going to go back on what I said because I stand by what I say.
Okay, but let me ask you something. Do you understand what you said?
Yeah, I understand what I said.
Do you hate black
people?
Because
that happens to be the people that are affecting the neighborhood that I live in. Yes, that I understand what I said.
Right, but
if it was Martians moving in on my street and my neighborhood wrecking
Martians.
It, I'd have a problem with Martians.
All right, but when people... And I'm going to say this because I know that for a while there, you know, we walked around a lot of the South Buffalo neighborhoods. Remember a long time ago, James,
yep.
You know, he's on
and
the
he
show.
He still lives in South Buffalo.
And he lives in South Buffalo. We were trying to run him for a council seat. And so what we decided to do one day was you have to go through the neighborhoods and you have to get signatures.
Okay.
So we canvassed South Buffalo and we ran into all types of people. We ran into, you know, people who took care of their houses, seemed like decent people. And we ran into a lot of trash, white and black, trash. So I don't see how you could, and this is the part, this is the disconnect people have with you, which is people hear you say black people, but white people are just as trashy. And that's kind of the missing point. But I wonder if it's because that you're comfortable with a certain group of people, that trash is comfortable to you. It's like, yeah, you don't notice it so much. But if they look different... You're not used to those type of, you know, to different people in your neighborhood, and they're trashy. Well, then it's all people. Does that kind of make sense?
Well, it makes sense, yeah.
So I think more than anything else, it's you taking an entire race of people and labeling them as the reason for the demise of the neighborhood. That's why people are hating on you.
Well, the demise of the... I mean, have you drove through the east side lately? Have you checked that neighborhood out?
It's a very poor area.
But you also missed out the part that I also walked through South Buffalo. And there was a lot of white trash, man. I mean, there were some neighborhoods that are just trashed. And they're white. Now, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, I don't... The street I live in, there don't seem to be that much trash down here. I don't...
Maybe farther down,
maybe it's starting to get bad. But, I was speaking in generalities yesterday, and I just... I don't know what to tell you.
I'm going to throw one more at you. Of the neighborhoods I've lived in, I've lived next to drug dealers. You know what they were? White. Drove us nuts.
Well, they come in all colors.
What do you want me? I mean, so in other words, what do you want me to say about that?
Well, I mean, there's bad everywhere, but the majority of the bad that I see around this part right here doesn't happen to be white, sir.
Right. So, but that's why you get nailed for being, I guess, people would say, ignorant, because.
Well, how about this one? How about I've received more phone calls and neighbors stopping by today, patting me on the back, saying thank you for saying what I've thought all my life.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's good, you know? I mean, because they might have the same sort of limited...
Good or bad, it needed to be said. So hopefully people realize when they come down to these neighborhoods and people don't talk to them...
But what are you trying to... I guess the thing is, though, what are you trying to prevent? In other words, you know, America, United States of America, land of the free, home of the brave, wouldn't you say?
Land of the free. I can't even speak my mind without getting death threats. I don't see where the land of the free is coming.
But keep in mind, you're speaking your mind right now. We're allowing you to speak your mind and everything like that, and we're not, you know, threatening your life or anything like that.
Right.
But you know, you got to be careful when you wade out into certain and say certain things, especially in 2012, which may have been cutting edge in 1940 or 1950. You know, people are going to be upset because they're tired of that type of thing. In other words, what you said, it's not like you were a truth teller coming out and going, you know, it needed to be said. People have been saying this stuff for decades, for a long, long time. So it's not like you said anything new.
Right.
Right. Okay.
It just maybe it needed to be refreshed.
I don't think it does.
No,
you don't understand. It doesn't need to be refreshed. at some point, we've got to stop saying that stuff because
is it? I want to know: is it wrong?
Perpetuating a bad.
Is it
bad
wrong thing. To say that you hate black people?
I don't hate. Well, I kind of hate everybody equally. So I mean, it wouldn't be black people.
All right, that's a good thing.
I don't want one of them moving in next to me. No.
But wait a second. Would you rather? Let me ask you something. Would you rather have a black family that you know they're all good neighbors and everything like that, or some white trash drug dealing idiots? Who would you rather live next to?
I could probably deal with white trash a little bit better.
But why? That's the big question. They're still bringing down your property values. They're still going to deal drugs. They're still going to be a mess.
Sooner or later, they'd have to move too. Maybe I'd be a little more lenient with them.
But
sooner
okay.
or later, they'd have to
All
go
right,
to.
All right, now we're getting somewhere. Now, why would you be more lenient with them? Because
maybe they're white.
Because you're white, and you're comfortable with them, and that's the.
I'm a little more comfortable around white people. Is that what you want me to say?
Kind of right. I think that's kind of the point.
Okay.
All right.
So now we're getting somewhere.
All right, but understand that you know you still can't just label an entire race of people because you're just going to get crushed, and that's also not the way to do it. I mean, think
okay,
about
well,
this.
How These about are, this? I apologize if I hurt the hardworking family's feelings behind that, but I was talking about a specific type of individual that comes into a nice neighborhood and ruins it.
All right, and we're I've got to tell you something too, and we gave you your opportunity. We got to that point at least. We're on the clock because we got Florio coming up, and they're suing the NFL. But at least understand this: when you're talking about that certain type of person, they come in all shades.
Yeah, and self-hating white traitors come in all shades too. So there you have it. There's the interview by Shred and Reagan. By the way, you can follow Shred and Reagan at twitter.com/. Or their Twitter handle is @ShredAndReagan, and that's 2 D's, SHERED AND RAGAN. So go ahead and follow those guys and tell them what you think about their asinine, run-of-the-mill, anti-racist approach. They're also on Facebook at facebook.com/pages. Shred and Reagan /489-340-55468. I'll just put that link on the podcast so you can go to tribaltheocrat.com and check out our post on Tribal Theocrat Live for our July edition. And you'll see a link to everybody there. Ed Durant's Twitter, Ed Durant's email, and shredandreagan.com Twitter and Facebook. But seriously, get a hold of the guys and tell them how you feel about it. Don't miss the opportunity to give some feedback for your people. There's not a lot we can do as we go to our own peril, but we can at least fight. Either get in the fight or die. And you can get in the fight as simple as have a Twitter account and say something. Speak up. I'm going to send Ed Durant and Ted Shred and Tom Reagan a link to this podcast after the radio show is over, and I put it in podcast form so they can hear how stupid they are and give themselves a pat on the back. But let's go ahead and review quickly some salient points of this interview with our friend William Shanahan. Notice at the very beginning, what did they say? Well, there was an important part missing from your response there, William. You should have said, I personally think it's wrong that people think this way. I don't agree with it, but... Are you serious? You're telling people what they should think and what they should say? That's outlandish. That's how thought police work. That's how anti-Semitism and anti-racism stuff works, is that you can't think it. It doesn't matter what the merits of the case are for wanting to discriminate or wanting to practice free association by not living around these people. You just can't say that. So he starts giving his views, namely that they should not come around these neighborhoods. And he says, whoa, you're missing the relevant part. Basically, you need to believe the opposite of what you believe. Because that's the standard of political correctness. You should be PC. And PC is a meaningless construct anyway. That doesn't matter. You should be that way. That's just foolish. Also catch the tiny snicker when he said, well, where else have you lived, William? Georgia, Florida, Tennessee. And there was a slight laugh by the host, as if to say, oh, well, you probably picked up these views from the old South. From Dixie. Racist Dixie. That's my impression anyway. And then the show host says, well, you know, I've noticed white people, too, who run down neighborhoods. And then Shanahan goes, yeah, but that's not what we're talking about here. Exactly. That's how you deal with that. One, white people don't run down neighborhoods to the degree that blacks do. And two, he should have called him out, as Tim Harris says, and says, well, name two or three good golden neighborhoods run down by whites. It wouldn't be able to be done. But the important point here is that he called him, he turned the tables and said, look, I'm not here to discuss that. This issue is about blacks coming into white neighborhoods and running them down. Boom. And it's also interesting that William didn't even know about the house. He was talking in generalities to a reporter who just shows up to ask his general views on basically race. Not the issues at hand, but race. Which tells me this was a little bit of baiting here. They had some profile of this guy and knew he would say stuff, as the radio guys say. Why'd you say stuff? So the reporter is not there in the first place to report. He's there to get a story. He's there to get to fulfill an agenda. And Shanahan says, I get death threats. Now, was there a response here by his kin? These guys are white, by the way. These two radio hosts are white. That's pretty serious. When one of my kinsmen gets death threats for speaking his views? Nope, no response there about that. The hosts don't care about that. They probably agree that racists deserve such death threats. And then the question comes, and this is the whole agenda of the radio interview. Here it comes. Do you understand what you said? Do you hate black people? And then he says, yes, he understands what he says. And the question to these guys that he should have said is, do you understand that it's true? That I've got facts behind my position. People prefer their own race. Historically, you're a novelty, you idiot egalitarian show hosts. Do you not care about free association? And I would have turned those tables on those guys there, too. And beautifully, Shanahan goes, if it were Martians, I'd have a problem with Martians. That's great. And they didn't really want to exchange with him on that issue, because he called him out. We're not talking about Martians. We're talking about blacks. If it were Martians, I'd have a problem with Martians. But we have a problem with blacks. Let's talk about the issue. And then here's the moment of truth by the radio hosts. Do you trust a white drug dealer or a black who takes care of his property and his family? And then, like a good, loyal kinist and white advocate, he says, I'd probably have more tolerance for my white neighbor. And the reason is because he's white. That's exactly the reason. That's all you need to know. He's my extended family. I have to jump through a lot more concentric circles of race before I get to the black who takes care of his lawn. But I'm going to stick with my kin, even though he has a few problems. Great answer. And he says, the majority of bad around here doesn't happen to be white, sir. Boom. But then the response comes, and here's a real ignorant response. But that's why you're called ignorant. Again, okay, we may be called all kinds of things. We may not fit the bill of PC. But is it true? Does it make sense? Is it the historic position of the West? They're not there to discuss it. They're there to label him as a racist. He says the people are patting him on the back for telling the truth. Again, no comment there. They don't want to pursue that line, because that's a big deal. All they say is, well, that doesn't make it good. Well, neither does retorting the political platitudes and popular maxims of political correctness make them true either. Then the show hosts talk about Land of the Free, Home of the Brave, and Shanahan goes, what? Land of the Free, Home of the Brave? I can't speak my mind without getting death threats. Awesome. This guy nails it. He's got it right. Something was said about the cutting edge. I think he said that William's views were cutting edge in 1940. What does cutting edge have to do about anything? In fact, the show host's view, this egalitarian racial amalgamation, no differences, no discrimination between races, don't prefer yourself over someone else, that's cutting edge. And so William's views weren't cutting edge in 1940. It was common parlance. It was the way of the West. It was the way of the few centuries preceding it. It's the way of history. And then he says, well, maybe this needs to be refreshed, William says. And then they say, oh no, it doesn't need to be refreshed. At some point, we've got to stop saying that stuff. No, we don't. It's true. Then again, you get the old question, the purpose of the interview. Once again, do you hate black people? They asked it two or three times. And Bill says, no, I don't want one moving next to me. I prefer white trash to black people. And I'm more lenient toward whites. And that was just a really good way to answer those guys. Even though it seems outlandish to people, stand up for the truth. Why? Because they're white. And then the typical response, well, you can't label an entire race of people. Well, yeah, you can if you're speaking in generalities. This is the difference between the fallacies of hasty or sweeping generalization. Those are informal fallacies, but to speak in generalizations, that's not a fallacy. If you don't do that, then everything is an unrelated particular, and you can't even predicate. You can't talk about the world at all, because things are spoken of in classes, not always particulars. So he doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah, you can label a whole race of people. The very comment that white people can't label blacks is to label a whole race of people. It's to tell them, namely, what they can and can't do. And he concludes the interview, evil comes in all shades. Well, yes, it does, and so does stupidity. All shades of popular PC-seeking radio hosts, these trendy guys who are status seekers, they'll have to answer to God in the end for turning their back on their people and violating the Fifth Commandment. That's all for my rant. We're going to take a quick break and play some music and come back with Joe Adams of the White Voice Radio Show.
And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, come and see. And I saw, and behold, a white horse. There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing, multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum, voices calling, voices crying, some are born and some are dying, it's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come, and the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne, and at his feet they'll cast their golden crowns when the man comes around. Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down when the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing, multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum, voices calling, voices crying, some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. pigeons are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured a hundredweight and penny pound, when the man comes around. His name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.
Well, we're back at Tribal Theocrat Live. We have a guest with us today. His name is Joe Adams. And Joe, are you there? Hi, Joe. Are you there?
Hey. Oh, yeah.
Good. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem.
How's the weather up there in New York these days?
Scalding hot. It was like a 95 degrees today, I think, but not much humidity. So not too bad today.
Is that pretty unregular for New York in the summer?
Oh, yeah, we're in the middle. I think the whole country actually is in the middle of a heat wave, and we've been subjected to it too, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I'm out here in the Midwest, and we've been waiting for rain for probably 30, 40 days straight with no rain. All the grass is brown, and just about an hour ago before I did the start of the show, we had some big dark clouds going through, and we got excited and went outside in the porch, and nothing, no rain. It all faded away.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thanks again for coming on. I want you to give our listeners a idea of what you do at your website, which was formerly called SaveWhitePeople.com, and there's been a recent name change. So talk about your work you do there and at the White Voice Radio Show, if you can.
Well, basically, it was SaveWhitePeople.com. It still technically is, because if you type in SaveWhitePeople.com, it will redirect you to our new URL,
okay.
GuardiansOfDiversity.org. We've been doing this since May 2011. We started pre-production on it in February 2011. We started the show, had an audience that can fit in a thimble, and now we've reached the point where a good month is now considered a bad day, which is really incredible for me. So with all that success we had and the hard work with really a handful of people that have come and gone, we've really elevated it to the next level. So we decided to make it an organization, get something that exists out there for people who are normal, who act normal, dress normal, speak normal, don't necessarily do all the old traditional things that are proving themselves not to work. And, you know, there's a lot of intellectual groups out there, but they're not doing anything. And there's a lot of active groups out there, but they're just of no interest to me because my ideologies don't necessarily align with theirs. But we're going to have episode 60 next week, so we've been around for a while now.
Great. That sounds terrific. So what's the new website name? It's I'm thinking it's
Guardians of Diversity. Now, I know a lot of people hearing this are going to roll their eyes and think it sounds like a liberal thing. But the biggest problem in our battle is not what we're going to do and fight in the streets. At this juncture, it is taking back the language. For example, the N-word for the black words. Well, we have for the black race, we have an equivalent for our race, and that's the R-word, racist. And just that one word pounds whites into submission. And now we are taking back the word diversity, because I'm for diversity. I don't know about you, Christian, but us in our place, them in their place, and it sounds like a plan to me. Multiculturalism and diversity are not synonymous. The world's diversity is fine. I believe if the Africans want Africa, they have every right to it. Asia for the Asians. And, you know, we need a place of our own. And we are basically the only race out there that does not have an homogeneous territory that we can call our own. Proponents of diversity. Another reason for the name change, real quick, is we've been pretty active in the streets. Anybody who checks out our activism page will see that we've had people running for school board. We've been in the streets all over the place. And unfortunately, a lot of the response from people was, save white people, and they were rolling their eyes. Mm-hmm. But I think using Guardians of Diversity, and it's not a hoax, it's real, we feel that way, sure. But we'll lure people in instead of having them roll their eyes and suck their teeth.
Right. Yeah, I get that. And that's virtually the position of myself and Kenneth to believe that it's ethno-nationalism. So nations for blacks, nations for Asians, nations for whites. We don't want to exterminate anybody, kill anybody, hate anybody. We just want to be left alone and have the ability to control our future.
Mm-hmm. And if we point out all the contradictions that we are the only race without a territory for our own, mm-hmm. We can pull up examples like, hey, well, the Jews have Israel and nobody is stopping them. In fact, people applaud them around the world, at least the first world applauds Israel for what they're doing. And if the Jews want to have Israel, I say more power to them, because I don't care who they're exterminating in doing so with the Palestinians, because it's not my problem. It's not my people. Nobody is crying for the white people about the Mexicans coming up from the south. So, yeah, I mean, that's really it, is every race or any ethnic group, religious group, if they want to have a chunk of their own, I say more power to them, including right. us.
Isn't it funny how Israel gets to have internment camps for blacks?
Oh, yeah. Did you see Benjamin Netanyahu was complaining that there's too many blacks in Israel? Yeah. And I said, oh, you know what karma is. It was pretty funny for me, at least. Yeah, I mean, whatever. I mean, they can do what they want. But eventually, we have to understand is that as the races continue to explode, for example, from 2000 to 2010, the Hispanic non-white population in this country increased by 43%. They almost have their population. So if there was 100 Hispanics in this country 10 years ago, now there's 143 of them. And keep in mind, as that continues to perpetuate, that's going to be half of the 143 now, that double, not half of the 100. So they're going to have to go places, and that's why it's important we get our own chunk of land that we say, sorry, but you're not allowed.
Agreed. So as a part of your website, you run a show, and is that still going to be called the White Voice Radio Show?
Oh, yeah, that's not going to change. Okay. The only thing that will change with that is we're not going to be a live show anymore just because we're making constant phone calls. And it's tough to get, you know, when you're recruiting people to an organization to do a live show every week. And plus, we're getting a lot of hits on our podcast, but not a lot on the live show. But, yeah, we're still going to call it The White Voice. It'll still be around, hopefully, until they decide to take me out.
Hopefully that won't happen. How long have you been in the fight, and what got you in the fight for the white race?
Oh, well, I actually haven't been in the fight too long, and a lot of people accuse me or say that I flip-flop on things, but the fact of the matter is that I'm a pretty young guy, so I'm learning a lot. I was kind of cast into the fire. I signed up with an organization. I said, hey, you know, I got all this radio equipment. Let's make a radio show happen. So I have only been involved in this for about 2 years now, and you know, it's been growing, and I'm happy about that. But, yeah, just about 2 years.
So 2 years for the radio show, but when did you become racially aware? When did you have your awakening?
Oh, well, I actually consider myself to have always been racially aware. If you read my handbook, I have the four tiers of racial understanding that a lot of people would probably find interesting. You know, racial awareness, consciousness. Well, actually, consciousness is first, then awareness, and then racial enlightenment, and then racial elite. But I was always racially conscious. I did have non-white friends growing up, because obviously that's something you have to suck up and deal with living in the belly of the beast, as I like to call it. But I've always had racial instincts. But the one thing that really pushed me over the edge is a few years ago when I was applying for colleges, I was sitting in a homeroom class, and they're doing the morning announcements, and they basically say that everybody who's a non-white come to the main office and claim your grants, not scholarships based on merit, but your grants. And Chris, you know who went down there? All the Filipinos who have summer houses in Florida and the Philippines, and their dentists and doctors and all these kinds of people. And me, coming from a working class white family, I never had any of those things.
Yeah, it's not for you,
really,
buddy.
Yeah, that's what really pushed me over the edge. And I said, you know, if I don't stand up and do something, who is going to do something about it? And you know, that's what made me look for make the plunge, rather. And, yeah, here I am today.
Oh, good. That's great. Here's a softball question for you. There's a lot of talk about future extinction of the white race. And how do you respond to those who say, well, so what? Race is just color. It's meaningless. We should be concerned with human extinction, not white extinction or any racially specific extinction.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because a lot of these, you know, basically you're asking me about the people who say there's only one race,
right.
The human race, right?
Right.
There's two ways to deal with these people. The first of which is not dealing with them at all, because you're never going to convert them and you're wasting your time. Seek out the young white kids in colleges who are sick and tired of themselves getting the shaft. The other way to deal with this is say, sorry, but when I fill out my applications for jobs in Fortune 500 companies and academic scholarships and grants and what have you, the human race is not an option.
There you go.
Race is a matter of convenience to people. The same people who are against racism are also the same people who are in the streets fighting for affirmative action and all these civil rights. So, I mean, you can't have it both ways and talk out of both sides of your mouth, is what I tell these people. But most of the time, I don't deal with them, because what's going to happen is they're going to remember SaveWhitePeople.com or TribalTheocrat.com, and what they're going to do is, after they're a victim of a black crime, they're going to go, that guy Chris I was talking to, or ooh, that guy Joe I was talking to, realize that, wow, they aren't crazy. And when a black guy is beating in their head with a pipe, they'll realize what a social construct race is not.
That's a good point. There is no human race checkbox on the Census Bureau form, is there?
Yeah, that's what I say. I mean, was there even a Hispanic one? I mean, I know the numbers are certainly skewed.
Yeah, and they really play with that Hispanic thing, the non-white Hispanic, the Hispanic. What does that come from? It's just bogus.
Well, where it comes from is that the white race in this country is, as we all know, and I'm beating a dead horse here, is declining. And what they're going to do is they're going to try to milk the majority white thing for as long as they can. I would honestly be surprised if we're any more than 60% of the population in this country, because a lot of the Hispanics count as whites, and a lot of legal aliens in this country don't count towards the census. So it's funny, because they're just trying to cover up the fact that we're declining, because if somebody looked at the numbers like we talk about, they would be like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And eventually, when the white race is, say, 40% of this country, they're still going to call us a majority.
Right.
Because remember, minority only means people who are not white. It doesn't mean people who make up a certain percent of the population. Minority is a code word for non-white, and
true,
majority is a code word for white.
That's it. Just like racist is code word for white.
I'm not going to get into that, but yeah, on a certain level it is.
Just speaking of the double standard, we don't hear too many blacks being called racist for doing the same things that a racist white might do.
Oh, well, I mean, that's needless to say, but I know that, see, we have to understand, as I know you're talking about the mantra and Bob Whitaker and all that, and you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there who were still white supremacists and wish to see blacks enslaved. And I'll give you a perfect example of a white supremacist. A modern day 21st century white supremacist is Donald Trump. Donald Trump gets all the glasses for the glass panes for these big hotels and buildings that he builds in China and Bangladesh and Thailand and all of these people. He's a consummate white supremacist, as somebody who is exploiting non-white slave labor. So, you know, when you point something like that out to people, they're going to say, they're going to think twice about it.
Yeah. So here's another question that's almost a softball, but maybe not. I don't know. I want to get your take on this. Who is the main enemy of our people? The Mexican, the black, the Jew? Who is it?
The main enemy of the white man is the white man himself, mostly because...
No, go ahead.
What's that?
No, I was just saying, that's a good answer. It goes into our next question, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember the question list now. Yeah, well, I mean, that's the honest answer to this question.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, white people really need to free themselves from themselves. All these people who have their convoluted white guilt that is going on, these people are bigger enemies. We cannot blame the blacks for being how they are, whether it be violent or obnoxious or whatever in most cases. We can't blame the Jews for being a very influential minority around the world. We can't blame these people, because that is their nature. We cannot make a skunk stop stinking, as we like to say at my show. But what we can do is try to educate our people from within. And, you know, like the previous question you asked me, if they don't want to change, then eventually when they're a victim of a non-white crime in their pearly white neighborhood, turns into an annexed third world country, seemingly, they'll understand the root of the problem.
Very good. Yeah, I on my podcast and on the last, I've only had two or three live shows that eventually get turned into podcasts, I always save a little excoriation for the white race, because that's the truth, is that, yeah, we have enemies that are non-whites, and they have an agenda. But we have numbers, big time, and we have the ability to wake up, to put down our gadgets and our iPads and our sports and all this stuff we're encumbered with, and wake up and smell the coffee and defend ourselves and take back our nation.
Yeah, well, I mean, the blacks are going to kill us with their crime, and the Mexicans are going to kill us by outbreeding us. So that's a major concern as far as the other races are concerned, but a lot of our problems lie within ourselves.
I agree 100%. Now, you and I got connected through my article I did on Jared Taylor, which was based off your very good and courageous interview of him, which is located on your website. And so thank you for asking him the tough questions and great interview. What's your overall assessment of him as a white advocate and others who do this game? If the banner on his website quotes from Thomas Jefferson, which says, "There is not a truth existing which I fear or would wish unknown to the world," yet this guy has been known for squelching discussion of the Jewish question at his conferences.
Well, you see, I think I was the first person to finally pop the Jewish question on Jared Taylor, mostly because it was my first go-round. But I still would have done it anyway. I've always given him a hard time. I actually really personally like Jared Taylor. We email back and forth every now and then, and he's always been extremely cool with me. As far as his pro-white advocacy goes, I think he does a good job. What bothers me, though, is that there's too many, like I said at the very top, too many of these people who simply have the intellectual abilities, but they do nothing. And that's a problem. But we have to understand is everybody has their own niche in this. And if Jared Taylor's is putting out color of crime reports, then I say more power to him. That's where guys like me step up who are willing to go out and do something and organize people and actually have a viable organization. As far as him with the Jewish question is concerned, I really like the answer he gave me. His answer, if you remember, was that whites who complain about Jews constantly are like blacks who complain about the white man. And I definitely agree with him on that, because people who complain about the Jews, for example, and the Jew liquor and the Jew this and the Jew that, nobody's forcing these things on you. Nobody is forcing you to spend $200 a month on quote-unquote Jew cable. Nobody's forcing you to down Jew whiskey or any of these things. So, I mean, yes, there are Jews who are on the wrong side of the table. Believe it or not, there actually are Jews who are on the right side of it, in my experience. But, I mean, who you choose to work with is up to you. And, I mean, I don't know if the Jews have their hands in his pockets. I don't know what's going on with that. But I think he takes a fair approach to it. And the answer he gave me was pretty fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to go so far as to say he's on their payroll. And I agree that the answer that whites shouldn't blame, I think the way he said it was whites shouldn't blame their problems on the machinations of others. That is true, and that's what you're saying, and that's what I'm saying by criticizing my own people. But I just didn't like the whole idea of I'm not afraid of any truth, and yet he has been known for squelching that question. I think that he should deal with it up front, but maybe he has his own strategy where he knows about it, and he's just deciding to stay quiet.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine with him. If that's what he wants to do, that's fine. And we also have to keep in mind is that by pointing the finger at the Jews and the blacks and Mexicans and what have you, pointing the finger at these people is only giving them a rallying cry. This week on my show, episode 59, I talked about going from the defense to the offense. And believe it or not, it may sound like an offensive tactic, but it's actually a defensive tactic to blame these people all the time. We need to start controlling the ball. You know, not every sport is like baseball where the defense controls the ball. We need to start controlling the ball and stop blaming our shortcomings or whatever on Jews and blacks and what have you. Sure, a lot of these people are part of the pie that is killing our very people. But I think it's important that we understand we have self-liberation, because we're never going to get anything done if we don't. And you know, I mean, whatever he wants to do, I mean, that's fine. He's just not putting a target on his back. Like they're going to use it for a rallying cry. So, I mean, that's cool with me.
Good deal. I refreshed my browser, and I can now see the chat room that you were talking about, Joe.
Yeah.
Sounds like I'm not going to be taking a phone call from this guy.
Yeah, the trolls show up all the time.
That's crazy. What are your thoughts on government schools? The same enemy, in my view, of the white race runs and controls the paradigm that governs public schooling. Is it inconsistent with our philosophy as white advocates to send our children, our hope, and our future to institutions to be inculcated with multiculturalism, pluralism, Jew worship, and flat-out lies about history?
Well, I think if we can use religious exemption from various anti-white curriculums. That's a way to go. Another way to go, obviously, is homeschooling. And, of course, the last way to go, and excuse me, this was something new to me, actually. One of my longtime listeners said that he is sending his elementary-level students to internet school. Right. And what they do is they send him the curriculum, they go over it, and they test him by the semester, at the end of the year, or whatever, to make sure he's learning properly. So there are alternatives to the public school system. But yeah, I mean, you got to stay out of public schools, especially if you're in the inner cities, because not only are you going to get the indoctrination of anti-whiteness, you're also going to, of course, be surrounded by a lot of non-whites who are known to be in gangs. Something like only 6% of gang members, youth gang members, are white in this country. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to recruit. And also the drugs and what have you. In my experience in grade school, it was the non-whites who started with the drugs first, and it rubbed off on whites. So, I mean, homeschooling is the way to go, and it's really that simple.
Yeah, I think I agree. That's the best choice is homeschooling. And there are so many different ways of doing correspondence courses, and like you said, online courses, that it makes public school just a non-option. The main reason people go to the public school is because of it. That's what my parents did. It's a tradition, and that's what 90% of people do.
But, yeah, I mean, I went to public school for about 5 years, too, and it was pretty good. There was a lot of good people. I was just lucky to go in a white neighborhood here in New York. But, you know, it's just, unfortunately, there's too many vices to be picked up in these places.
Yeah, I agree. Completely agree. Now, we often, and myself included, like to moan and groan about our enemies and complain about our situation. But what are some solutions to our problem? What are some practical steps we can take to get out of this mess?
Well, like I said earlier, the first step is beginning to take back the language. Pointing out the contradictions is not enough, mainly because it's a defensive tactic. We need to get on the offense. And to get on the offense is that we need to tell people that we are only going to win this struggle if we get together. Because, see, a lot of people get worried about, ooh, if I stand out with a sign that says, hey, save the white race, or even something more mild than that, that they're going to lose their job. Well, you know what? The workforce won't be able to fire hundreds of thousands of people if we start standing together in the street. And we need to make it popular to be white again. And, you know, not to toot my own horn here or make a plug, but I think by joining us, we really have developed a bulletproof message, in my opinion, that we can really deploy the right way. And, you know, we're going to expect our members to be active. We're going to expect progress reports of our state leaders and things like that. But we need to understand that the internet is only a tool in this. It is not the end game. Going out and recruiting, even from Tea Party things, these people are probably closet racists to begin with. You go there and you recruit. You put out flyers by schools, and hopefully somebody like me will be in that school and it'll strike a chord and they'll get their activism going. So I really think it all starts with understanding that we need to work together. We need a viable organization, and, you know, granted, the one I just started is only an upstart at this time, but, you know, if people get behind us, and we have 100 members by the end of the year, and then by the end of 5 years, we have 1,000 members, the things that we can accomplish are truly limitless. And I really think that's what we need to do, is understand that it's going to take a concerted effort on the streets and the internet to build a wider and brighter world, which is what we're striving towards.
Here's another related question, practical question about how we can engage folks. Let's say I'm at a family Christmas party or at the water cooler or at work. What is it I can say that's provocative but yet doesn't blackball me or get me fired? Is there any way to thread that needle? Or
yeah, you see, there is. And I know that's a concern for you and a lot of people out there, is if you just stand up and say, God damn it, the white race is dying, you know, while you're by the water cooler talking about the Yankee game. And that's dangerous, because that is going to get you fired. What you could do is things like I do. If you're standing outside with school, or you're standing outside work, or doing whatever you're doing, going out to lunch, and you see the blacks acting according to their stereotype, you just shake your head and say, that's the blacks for you. Or little things like that. When I was into certain revisionism things, and that got brought up in the curriculum in school, I said, hey, did you know that Martin Luther King actually was not this great saint that they make him out to be? He was an adulterer, a plagiarist, and a communist. And they were like, what? And you know, those people that I told, maybe if there was three of them, at least two of them went and looked it up, and they were like, wow, Joe, you were right. Yeah. So little things like that, you don't have to necessarily pass out flyers and business cards, but I'm a big proponent of planting the seeds. And when you plant the seeds, you go back and water them every now and then. So if you say something about a violent black crime, or you're witnessing something that's violent and black or obnoxious and black, then down the line, when you're around that water cooler, Christian, mm-hmm. you will be able to spin around and say, hey, did you see about this Trayvon Martin? What did I tell you about? Remember that time we were there? And all of a sudden, it's going to get the ball rolling. That's really all we need to do is get the ball rolling.
Sure. I listened to your last podcast, as well as there's a promotional video on the right sidebar of your site, which I recommend all of my listeners to go and watch right away. And in that, I believe it was that, maybe it was either that or the podcast, you called for white advocates to get involved in your organization. So do some protesting, some objective public protesting. And I just wonder, this is a follow-up, what's your response to those who say that this kind of overt public effort is making oneself an easy target because we are, at that point, using our real faces, our real names? My name isn't Christian Gray because I use a pseudonym, but I'm compromised at this point because I work for a multicultural, pro-faggot, pro-Jew company, and if I come out with my name and my face, I'm gone. My paycheck's gone. No, I need to figure out a way to get out of that situation, but it's where I am now.
You want to know the way to do it?
Yeah.
Visit my activism page. And me and John King, he's kind of my right-hand man on the show. He went out. We went out in Times Square. He visited me for a week at the beginning of June and May. And we went out in Times Square, mm-hmm. and he wore a gorilla suit that said, Save the White Race, with a sign that said, Save the White Race. There is no reason that you can't do that, or any of your pals, or even me can't do that. Go out there, wear a costume, wear a mask. Look at these cowards in the Anonymous, for example. You know, these people who troll websites like ours, and these creeps who just show up and beat people's heads in with hammers. Right. They're wearing masks. Why can't we do that? Yes, we hate these people and despise these people because they're anti-white, but they are using strategies and tactics that work. Why can't we use them? So my idea is, you know what, go out and buy an ape costume off eBay for $50 and you won't have to worry about losing your job. It sounds stupid, but it works. If the message on the sign is right, use it.
I'm not sure if you're being sarcastic or serious.
I'm being dead serious.
Okay.
Even if it's a silly, plain white mask, right. Maybe a gorilla costume is a little bit too much. So you have to understand, as we were doing it in the belly of the beast, where there's a lot of blacks. Now, if John was standing there, and everybody knows what John looks like by now, because we've been all over the media, they would look at this white guy and probably strike him. But he wore the gorilla suit. You don't necessarily have to wear a gorilla suit with the feet pads and everything. But even just wearing a mask of some kind or a bandana or something.
So would a Barack Obama suit qualify as a gorilla suit?
You know what? that's actually not a bad idea. Imagine somebody with an Obama or Hillary Clinton mask out there. Or how about a George Bush mask?
Yeah.
That's even better. Go out there and wear a mask and hold up a sign.
So if I could ask you, are you out there with your real name and real face?
Not at this time. That's going to happen because we're going to go for a nonprofit organization. I actually used to make videos with me out there, but I have not at this time. I'm kind of using pen name and things like that, mostly because I'm in school. Other than that, see, I'm willing to put myself on the line, but only if people are willing to get behind me and meet me halfway.
Mm-hmm.
I can basically come out and say, I'm willing to throw my future away, but only if it's worth it and there's people behind me. Because I'm at the point in my life where I can go live a nice life,
yeah.
Like a normal run-of-the-mill person, or I can be a quote-unquote savior for the white race and put myself out there and throw myself into harm's way. I don't care about doing that. That's fine for me. But I'm not going to do that unless I have people behind me who are helping. And I'm sure that's the thing with you. You'd be willing to put yourself on the line if people were behind you. And that's how a lot of us feel.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Pseudonyms go. I think that's cool. I think people should use pseudonyms if they want. I mean, at the end of the day, your name does not change your message. I mean, I go by Joe most of the time.
Sure.
So, I mean, whatever. It's really as simple as that.
Yeah, it would be a lot easier if we had comrades who were alongside of us. And it's easier to do it with numbers. But it's more of a challenge when there's not... many people to join your side.
Well, you know what, Randy?
That's okay. You can call me Randy. I'm Randy, Christian, whatever.
Oh, you are Randy?
No, I'm kidding. My name's Christian.
I don't know why the hell I said Randy. No, but let me say this, is that the problem, we talk about the white disease all the time. One of the symptoms of the white disease is that we feel that the next guy is going to come along and do something. We can't have that. It starts with you, not necessarily you, Christian, but you out there who's listening. It starts with you. Don't wait for the next guy to come and do it. It's because the next guy might take your approach. But if you take the approach of being a progressive and doing something, then all of a sudden they might go ahead and do something and follow suit. So it all starts somewhere, and it starts with you as an individual.
The next question is about kinism. I wanted to know what your understanding of the kinist movement is and what's your evaluation, what are our strengths, weaknesses, and how can we work together?
Well, I heard you talking about the South before, and I hate to burst bubbles here, but if you're talking about kinism in a sense that it's a Confederate uprising, the South is not going to rise again, my friends. It is not going to happen. Standing there saying, Zig Heil, the South is going to rise again, is absolutely ridiculous. The South is going to be the first thing to collapse, actually. We're not going to enslave the blacks again or anything like that. But there's a lot of things about kinism, at least from what I read. I don't know too much about it, but just in passing, that I like. Extended families, ethnocentric views on things, ethno-nationalism. All these things are good. They're great. But this Confederate business is a thing of the past, and that's another symptom of the white disease. We're going to knock out all these by the time this interview is over. But that's another symptom of the white disease, is people going backwards. We need to go forward. We need to use the right language, and we need to get it together. Talking about Hitler and how many Jews died in the Holocaust is tangential. It's not doing anything for white people being mugged and murdered in schools today. Same thing with Confederate beliefs and things like that. Sure, you know, they lost the war, whatever, but it's time to move forward. But as far as ethno-nationalism goes, whether people like it or not, it's happening. The Mexicans are going to get their Aztlan. The whites are probably going to end up somewhere in the Northwest or maybe even mid-Upper West. And the blacks are going to get the Southeast, and I guess the Northeast is a crapshoot at this point. But that's what we need to keep in mind. It's happening already, whether we like it or not. And anything that's pro-white and pro-decency and normal is really cool by me.
Yeah, kinism is basically the belief. It's the old Christian belief that white people are a race, and nations and families should be racially homogeneous, and we have the right to secure our future. I think the pro-Hitler stuff comes more from the generic white nationalist guys like Alex Linder and that group. In terms of the pro-Confederacy, it is true that the kinist movement is really a subgroup of a reformed, mainly Presbyterian group, and not specifically. And we have theological ancestors like Robert Dabney and others who have been slandered, and we like to stand up for our heroes and dispel those myths. I don't think I know any kinist who wants to enslave blacks or that kind of thing. So there might be some misconceptions there, but I don't know of any kinist who goes around talking about the Holocaust.
No, I know. I'm that wasn't what I was talking about. Just talking about that's almost like the same thing as what I was trying to say about the South rising again. The South is really the product of the non-white immigration from the South, and we can't win back the South, and we just need to find a place of our own to live and thrive, and unfortunately the South is not going to be it.
Okay, well, we're almost at the end of the interview. You've agreed to take a caller, and I have a friend of mine. His name is Shotgun Smith. He runs a website called Shotgun Wild at Heart. He's a nice guy, thoughtful guy, and he's going to come on and ask you a question. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Good deal. Let me get him on here. Hopefully he hasn't fallen asleep.
Sounds like he's there.
Nothing like live radio.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show, Shotgun.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Thanks a lot, Randy.
Yeah, Randy. Randy Macho Man Savage.
Yes.
Long time.
Absolutely.
Long time no talk. How you doing? You're down there in Carolina, right?
Doing great. I'm getting a little bit of audio feedback.
Okay.
So,
if you're listening to the Tribal Theocrat show, just turn that down. Just mute it. Shut the page off, because you won't need that. That might be the problem. I don't know.
Okay, there we go. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Joe, you still on?
Yeah, I'm here.
So what's your question for Joe Adams?
Well, Mr. Adams, can you hear me? Is my microphone working?
Yeah, it sounds good. Go ahead.
Great. I love a lot of what you've been saying, and I like everything that I've heard. I'm a little concerned, though, as a Christian, as a racial nationalist and a Christian, When I listen to some of your episodes, specifically like episode 57, where you guys discuss specifically religious questions, and you come at these questions from a what I would consider a pagan, a Ben Klassen sort of creator paradigm. And I'm wondering, I mean, because you guys make some really cavalier statements about my precious Christian faith, and I'm just wondering if you could comment on how you... How, in your opinion, can Orthodox Christians, Orthodox Protestant Christians like myself, who claim to be Kenist, how we could work together with people like you who seem to have very antithetical and very harsh criticisms of our precious sacred faith?
Well, that's a good question. And I first want to say that if you do listen closely, you'll see I'm a little bit more of a moderate on these issues. I'm not a Christian. I was Catholic, actually, for quite some time, and then I stopped believing in it because I found it to be kind of nonsense, and I was saying that my God picked somebody else, and I started realizing how unhealthy that was. I do not agree with Christianity, but I'm open to working with Christians. I'm not one of these people who, when we get to the finish line, sorry, buddy, I like you, but you got to go because you're a Christian. I'm not going to be like that. I'm what I like to call, my philosophy is white first. If you're white, you act normal, you talk normal, you dress normal, and you can shake my hand and I don't smell beer on your breath, you're cool with me.
Oh, that would count me out, probably.
I'm talking about, you know...
Does bourbon count?
Yeah, sure. But you guys know what I'm saying. People who take it to the extreme. But as long as you're cool, I don't mind Christians. I don't believe in it. I believe the religious question is something that can be sorted out towards the end. I get a lot of shellacking for that because, sure, as you guys know, I was heavily into creativity not too long ago. But then I realized it's just too divisive and I'm wasting too much time going back and forth with people who are Christians. And believe it or not, there are people who are Christians who have treated me better than people who are creators. And that kind of opened up my eyes to dealing with these people nicely. It doesn't mean I'm going to believe in their God or their religion, but I'm certainly open to working with them. And there's really nothing to worry about, particularly as it comes to Guardians of Diversity, which I suggest you join. We don't care. Religion is going to be a don't ask, don't tell. It's going to be on don't ask, don't tell status. Because I don't want you to come here and talk about how your God exists, and just like I'm going to not come there and say how I believe your God doesn't exist. Now, I don't know.
Might I interject a quick question at this point? Because to me, as a Christian, and specifically as a Christian ethnic nationalist, I have a very strong nationalist philosophy based in my Christian theology. And to the point that I have to give up my Christian theology to discuss racial nationalism, I can't discuss racial nationalism. To me, it's an incoherent position outside of Christian philosophy, outside of a Christian theological context. No, so what I wanted to do is go to the Nature's Eternal Religion and some Klassen's material and just read to see what you guys' problem was with Christianity. And go ahead, please.
It being a root of your beliefs, that's fine. I don't care what the root of your beliefs are as long as you're pro-white. That's fine by me. But I understand what you're saying but with the organization, see, there's too many divisive things that go on, whether you are white-collar or blue-collar pro-white,
yes,
or Christian, yes, or a non-Christian pro-white. I mean, these things don't matter, and these are the very things that are holding us back.
I disagree. I think Jesus Christ is our Savior, and He's going to save us, and I don't think it's right to say that He's holding us back. And that's an ambiguous term as well. I don't mean to be divisive because I like a lot of what you're saying, and I do agree there's a dissident problem among white nationalist communities. How do we herd these cats, as it were? But I'm just not sure that we can do that in a neutral, religiously neutral fashion, as you're suggesting.
Well, has it ever been tried? That's a question I have for you. Has it ever been tried?
Well, I don't think it's morally plausible to try it. I think we need to take Christ into account and not commit blasphemy in our radio shows.
Well, you see, the problem with that is we're going to both be very hard-headed. I do not believe that Jesus Christ died on a cross for my sins.
Yes.
I'm open to the possibility of Jesus Christ existing as a historical figure. In fact, a lot of evidence suggests that he did. I actually just took a New Testament studies course because it was recommended, and I took it, and it was a very interesting course. It was a historical context, not a theological context. But see, the thing is, it hasn't been tried before, and when you work with somebody like me, I've worked very closely with Christians in the past, and they've never had a problem with me. In fact, I'm very open-minded. I don't know what happens after we die. A lot of people say, yes. No, we don't. Nothing happens when we die. That's it. I don't know that because I haven't died before. You know what I'm saying? So it's very possible that somebody is going to judge me when my biological clock ends up. I don't know. If somebody comes out...
Hello? I think we lost someone. Who's there? I know I'm here. I have a computer problem.
And says, hey,
well,
you know,
might I
you're wrong for believing that. Say, whatever,
hello?
I'll
can
cross the bridge when we come to it. But
yeah, hey, guys, sorry. There's a sound dropped off about 10 seconds ago. I couldn't hear anything but myself. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, I'm here. But okay. Just let me finish what I was saying real quick.
Sure.
I don't know what's going to happen after I die, and quite frankly, I'm not concerned about that right now. I am concerned with what's going on. A lot of things that scare me, well, the main thing that scares me about Christians is that they believe that Jesus Christ is going to come and save them in their lifetime. And that's very egotistical to believe that you will be so lucky that Jesus Christ comes back and judges the living and the dead in your lifetime. Because that's kind of crazy. Just like we think the apocalypse is going to happen in our lifetime, it's embedded in our ego. But what I'm saying is, if you come and work with me, you'll see whether you're a Christian or, like you said, creator, paganist, Odinist, what have you. It really doesn't matter to me. The only reason I say it needs to be on a don't ask, don't tell basis is in terms of activism. We can't be fighting in the streets over who died for who on a cross or who didn't.
A few more minutes, Shotgun, or I need to cut this off here in about 4 minutes. You guys still there?
I'm here.
Okay. I think we lost Shotgun Smith.
Well, I hope I answered his question.
Yeah, he's lost connection. And
well, you're a Christian. I'm sure you could defend him or at least meet me halfway on this.
Yeah, my purpose wasn't apologetic in nature. I was is more of a journalist. I want to find out what you're about and give you a chance to reach out to my listeners, but are you back on, Shotgun?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we have about 2 minutes. If you could wrap up, you could say something, okay. And then Joe could respond, and then we'll
all right, well,
break up the
fight.
I
apologize. I apologize about that. I've been talking with – I'm at the Council of Conservative Citizens Conference right now, and I was talking with Gordon Baum about Mr. Ben Klassen. So they have tried to work together in the past from a neutral standpoint, and I don't think – as a good Christian, I don't think that can ever work. I'm sorry to disagree with you there, Mr. Adams. And I think honestly, anybody listening to this needs to trust in Jesus Christ as their Savior, because that's the only way to save the white race. We're not going to do it by being neutral, and that's my humble opinion. And I'd like to give you the last word and hear what you would comment on that. Thank you.
Thanks,
well,
Shotgun.
Yeah, I'll make it quick because I know Christian's probably got to wrap up now. What you have to understand is by working with me, you're not working with somebody who's an ambassador for creativity. I don't even necessarily consider myself a creator because I believe a lot of the books are outdated. For example, we can't ship the blacks out of here and back to Africa. It's not going to happen. I don't believe we can conquer the world, at least in our lifetime. I believe we need to take small steps. And I also am open to whatever may be on the other side if it is actually true. And the only way to find out about that is experiencing that. So it is possible to work with us simply because we are not a creativity organization at all. We don't espouse creativity necessarily. One of our co-hosts did, but he's no longer with us. But it's really that simple. When you're dealing with me, you're not dealing with somebody who's going to be telling you that that your God doesn't exist. And it's really as simple as that. I'm open to things. I'm a little bit more spiritual than most non-theistic people are, like creators.
Well, I'm really happy that you guys were able to have a good exchange there and be respectful. Thanks, Shotgun, for calling in and being respectful. And thanks, Joe, for handling that hardball question. And thanks for coming on the show today. Can you tell anybody just quickly how they can get in touch with you, the best ways to get in touch with you guys and your organization?
Yeah, the best way is go on our website, guardiansofdiversity.org, or if that's too hard to remember, savewhitepeople.com redirects. I suggest you join, become a member, $10 a month. We're going to set up scholarship funds. We're going to raise money for cystic fibrosis. We are going to be in the streets. We're going to be recruiting. At least check out our membership application, and feel free to email me, joe@savewhitepeople.com. You can call us as well, and we'll be glad to answer all your questions. So thanks, Christian.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you again, and please, I will check out our webcast and our website in about 20-30 minutes. I'll have a podcast up, and you can check that out if you missed a live show. Thanks again, Joe. You guys take care.